Now, I'm going to read to you a small passage from the Word of God on our subject this morning, which is sea turtles. It doesn't actually mention the sea turtles here, but you'll find the relationship as soon as we get round to it. It isn't that I didn't have any breakfast this morning. I had a good breakfast this morning. I'm quite all right, thank you. But, see to it that no one makes a prey of you by philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the universe, and not according to Christ. For in Christ the whole fullness of the deity dwells bodily. And I'm going to work this morning on the fact that Jesus, the one who died on the cross for me, was the one who designed, with his knowledge of the deity, because he was the God who, through whom God made everything, the whole of biology. And we're going to take as our biology the sea turtle today. Now, the last time I spoke to you here was a little guided tour of the stomach of the sperm whale. And we went through into the sperm whale, through the sperm whale's mouth, with Jonah. And we said that when Jonah came out, he had the marks of death upon him. And Jesus himself said that there will be no sign given this generation except the sign of the prophet Jonah. And the sign of the prophet Jonah was the fact that anybody could see that he'd been into the whales or the big sea monster's stomach some time, so that his face was parboiled, and the point of his nose and his ears was probably all eaten away by digestive juices. And we said that even an unbelieving generation, like today's generation, if they see the marks on us that we've died with Christ, that will be a sign to them. You can argue till the cows come home and they don't listen. But if you see a person who obviously bears the humility and the love of Christ, and Christ glorified in himself, in that the person concerned did die with Christ in his baptism symbolically, but you can see it in his way of life, that will be a sign to the generation which is stronger than any arguments I can give. I once went to the 80th birthday of Professor Carl Heim. Years ago, he's been dead a number of years now, but he was a dear old professor of theology, a German professor of theology, and I asked him how too you could be a witness to the present generation that didn't care two hoots whether there was a God or whether there wasn't. And the old gentleman, he was a noble old man, he thought for a minute or two at his birthday table, and he said, there's only one sign which is infallible even in the present generation of unbelief, and that is Christ in you, the way of glory, the hope of glory. So that's what I want to talk about this morning, but I'm going to do it by mentioning some of the things and some more that I mentioned on our little guided tour of the sea monster's stomach into which Jonah descended when it swallowed him. Now, the sperm whale, which you find a lot off New Zealand, if you want to have a good look at them, go to Kaikuha, which is just north of Christchurch in the South Island, and there they have a special whale watching station. The sperm whale dives down to depths of 3 kilometers vertically and comes up vertically. Now you think of the pressure differences on that whale's body as it does that. We couldn't do it, because when we come up we should all die of Caisson's disease, which is diver's disease, the bends as they call it. because the nitrogen comes out of the blood and bubbles and blocks the arteries and capillaries of the body so that you die of thrombosis. Now, the whale doesn't. And it has an apparatus, instrumentation in its aortal system, which prevents the bubbling out of nitrogen into the body so that the whale can go up and down to these enormous depths, which people will not believe until you prove it to them that it is the case. Now, I said to you when I was speaking about this some time ago, just before Christmas, that I didn't understand how the whale could do it. Now, it's not that I think the whale understands how it does it. I don't think that. But it is instrumented to do it. Now, after I'd said that to you, and I didn't know how it could be done, theoretically, I had a dream. Now, I don't pay much attention to dreams, because I dream the most outrageous things. Especially after I've eaten nuts or eaten heavily the night before, then you do have the most surprising dreams, which prevent further sleep from taking hold of you. It says of Nebuchadnezzar that sleep flew from him, and it certainly does in my case. Anyway, the subject of the dream was this: how you could do it. Because, as I said, the oil companies, Shell Oil Company and people like that, who have to do a lot of diving, would give their right hand or their right eye to know how you could avoid decompression tanks for divers as they come up, to avoid bends, you see, the nitrogen bubbling out in the blood and like a pop bottle, and then, of course, you circulation is blocked. Well, it struck me in this dream how you could do it, and it's not a fantastic dream, such as a good many of my dreams are, but if you could fix the nitrogen chemically at room temperature, or the temperature of the blood of the whale, then of course the nitrogen would no longer be present as the elemental nitrogen having a vapor pressure, which would come out on changing of pressure, but the vapor pressure of nitrogen would disappear, and if you could fix it. Now, the struck me in my dream that the clover plant, the white one as well as the purple one, has in its root nodules little colonies of Azotobacter, and these fix nitrogen just as it is, so it's no longer nitrogen with its vapor pressure. Now, if you could get that, I don't know whether this is the case, but if you could get that in the system of the whale, and it could fix the nitrogen then, that would do the trick, theoretically. But you'd have to find out whether it does. I don't know whether it does, but perhaps the Shell company will come and offer me $1 million to come and tell them how to do it. Well, I don't know. No such luck until now. Now, I'm going to say just a little bit more about that before we go on to the sea turtle. The whale, the sperm whale, when it dives down to 3 kilometers, it catches the giant octopus. And the giant octopus is some 3 to 4 yards in diameter, and its tentacles can be up to 15 yards. And it swallows those whole. As many as 38,000 squids and octopuses have been found in sperm whale stomachs. 38,000. So they really are addicted to to these little animals. Now, I didn't say 38,000 of these giant ones. I didn't say that. But there are various sizes they found in their stomach. So the appetite is pretty great. Now, if a sperm whale has an encounter in the black darkness of the deep ocean, the sperm whale can see the giant octopus with its echolocation mechanism. It utters clicks and calculates then the time that the click has to be reflected back to the sperm whale. Now, to calculate the distance, that means that the sperm whale has a computer which is programmed to the speed of sound in water. So you've got quite a lot of mathematics here. Now, if you think mathematics and programming comes, as Jacques Monod said, from chance chemical reactions, then I shan't talk to you anymore, because I shall say the nearest psychiatrist is just round the corner off of you, and go and have a talk to him. Because you can't get instrumentation involving programming out by chance. But that programming of the speed of sound in water is put onto the sperm whale's sperm in its DNA molecule. It's coded into the thing. Now, where did that come from? If you think that was guessed by chance, I shan't talk to you, because I don't think it's worth it. I don't think it's worth wasting our breath. But the fact is this: come up with a solution for how a sperm whale can be programmed in its DNA molecule to know and calculate on the speed of sound in water. That's the problem. Now, you've got to give me a reasonable answer to the assertion that Jacques Monod made before he died, that everything in biology can be accounted for by chance rather than by volition and personal will. You've got to give me an answer to that. I believe that that was given by a personal creator, because I don't think non-persons calculate. If I were to say a mathematician did his work by non-personal method, you know, he'd knock my block off. Because he's perfectly sure he knows what he's doing, and it's a part of his personality to do it, and I respect him for it, because he does things that I can't do. Anyway, leave that. The sperm whale, if it goes down and locates a giant breakfast, giant ice cream, down in the depths of the Black Ocean, and the octopus gets to know the sperm whale is there and tries to get it into its mouth, the sperm whale will often coil round the head, the octopus will often coil round the head of the sperm whale so that it can't open its mouth. And if he can't open his mouth, he can't swallow him. So what does the sperm whale do? He shoots straight up to the surface. He surfaces again, and he's protected by his instrumentation against the bends, and the octopus isn't. And the octopus gets his thrombosis and dies, and at the surface, the sperm whale eats him. He's dead. He can't resist, so it's all right. That's how it's done. Now, you think of instrumentation, calculation of ways of life, and put it all down to chance. You tell people to fight a war on that basis and see what they say to you. You see, what I'm worried about, ladies and gentlemen, is telling our kids from kindergarten onwards that all biology is accountable for by chance. It is not. Now, no instrument, scientific instrument or any other, can be made by that method of chance. You see, every instrument has to have shaped component parts. You see, if you take a car engine, that's a good instrument, isn't it, to take, because we all know how cars work. It has to have a crankshaft in it. Now, if it doesn't get the special shape and size of the bearings exactly polished to the right size and right shape, if it doesn't get that from directed energy, which is the opposite of chance, where does it get it from? I've never seen anything like a crankshaft or even a wheel, cogwheel of a watch, arise by that method. And then to say that natural selection sorted out the ones which would be useful and then multiplied those by self-replication is just simply nonsense, because if chance doesn't make the components, how is natural selection going to separate them out? You can't filter off anything that isn't there, you know. I couldn't anyway. I often tried when I was in the lab, but it never works. You've got to have it there first. And if you can't account the components being there first, then give it up, because it isn't worth the waste of effort on that method. It's wrong. I can put it even clearer. If you have in your car, as you do by law, the speedometer to show how fast, how much too fast you're driving, you need for a speedometer, besides all the mechanism, the centrifugal force and all the rest of it, to work the wretched thing, you need a dial, you know, with the figures on it. For every instrument, even these instruments we're going to talk about on the turtle now, you need a means of measuring. And you have to have a dial for doing that. Now, if you think the speedometer dial is going to be arising by chance, by the method which Monod said would account for everything in biology, then I think the only thing is really a mighty good psychiatrist to get you on his couch and talk to you. I don't think it's possible. I'm very worried about telling kids that 2 + 2 = 5. You see, if they tell you that about biology, that everything in biology is accounted for by chance, as Darwin and Monod did, then you see a child is learning effectively that 2 + 2 = 5. That child will never do any mathematics in all his life, because his basis is wrong. So I'm very happy about this homeschooling movement, where parents can look at the books they want on these subjects and get some logic into the child. Now, let's have a look at our sea turtles, because I don't want to spoil your lunch by, you know, giving you indigestion and all the rest of it, by promising the next step in the story will come in the next edition, you know. I don't want to do that. That's rather a cheap way of doing things. Anyway, these turtles, the eggs are laid, like a number of reptiles do. They lay their eggs in special beaches on the seashore. One of the beaches is on the Atlantic coast, a lot of other beaches on the Atlantic coast of Florida. That's where you find a lot of them. Now, when the little egg starts to hatch, it's down in the sand, and it starts to wriggle and move as it hatches. And it has a very patent method of effortlessly getting to the surface, to get into the sea, which it wants to reach to feed. So it starts to wiggle around in its little nest where the eggs are, hatches itself, and brings down sand from the roof. And the sand is then trodden into the floor. So the floor gets higher and higher and higher, and the ceiling gets higher and higher and higher, and the whole bag of tricks is gradually raised, like in an elevator, to the surface. It's a marvelous little system of getting the eggs to the surface. Anyway, the little hatchling, when he comes out on the surface, it's dark. Lots of births, you know, take place at night, as the ladies know. Some others too, nurses and others. Anyway, if you get the little hatchling coming out of the sand, he scampers straight off into the ocean. Now, he's got one problem. How to get out into the ocean where he can feed? Because, like most babies, he's got a voracious appetite. So he wants a method of navigation once he's got down to the sea. How does he navigate? He's come straight out of the egg, straight out of the sand, and his automatic lift, his automatic elevator didn't give him any clue where he's got to go, but he knows. Now, how does he know? What he does, perhaps you put the first slide on, would you? Thank you. There are the little fellows, the little hatchlings, as they come out of the eggs. Perhaps you put the next one on too. He's wanting to get to the Sargasso Sea, because that's where he feeds. So he wants to get out here from Florida, here on the Atlantic coast. Now, if he gets into the water, he isn't caught on the way down, because there are lots of predators waiting for him, because they know where these eggs are being laid, and they lay in wait for them. If he gets into the water, How does he know where the open sea is? Because it's all dark. He can't see very well. So what they did, perhaps put the next one on, would you? Be so kind. So what they did to find out how this little fellow navigates, they took a dish, a satellite dish for television, and put water in it, and a little rotating system here to which you could harness the hatchling. Now, the hatchlings who are such in that way attached to the apparatus like that showed that if you developed waves of water in this system here, the hatchling would always swim into the waves. That is, it will swim into the direction where the waves are coming from. It notices where the waves are breaking on its little head, and into that it swims. Now, if there are no waves, then it will swim around for a minute or two, confused. It doesn't know how to orientate itself. But if you put round the satellite dish, if you put round a Rubens coil, now you learned people at Calvary all know what a Rubens coil is, don't you? If you don't, I shall have to work a bit harder, and I'll demand a little extra ration when I get home so that I can replace the energy I've lost on you. Okay, so you see, what you do is if you pass a current round the Rubens coil, the current, if you pass it round right and the right strength, will reverse where the North Pole is, the magnetic North Pole is, it'll make the South Pole. So you make north, south, and then measure how the animals swim when there are no waves. And you know, if they're swimming in one direction on when you don't have any current in there, you pass the current through, and you'll find they'll start swimming the other direction. They'll just reverse. So they're obviously capable of sensing the magnetic field. Now, that's all right for a small hatchling who's only wanting to get to the open sea. That doesn't give him enough information to locate a particular beach. He's not wanting that, he's wanting food. And that's in the Sargasso Sea. So his both system of navigation will take him out towards the Sargasso Sea that I just showed you. But when he's out there, when he's grown, if he hasn't been eaten beforehand, when he's grown to a big sea turtle, that sea turtle has another system on top of these two that I've been talking about, and the third system depends upon what the turtle experts call a map sense in his head. And he knows the beach that he wants to get to, and he can locate it with the help of the compass on the magnetic field in his head, on the map that he carries in his head, and he can get back with absolute certainty from the open ocean to the beach that he wants. And that's the beach where he was hatched. And the various turtles don't mix up the beaches. They all go to the right beach. Now, one of those beaches, one of them, there are plenty of them, are in Florida. But they also nest turtles, various kinds of them, in the Ascension Island. Now, you know where Ascension Island is. All Americans are ever so good at geography, you know. They all tell you where Ascension Island is. Well, if you were in the Second World War, you know that a lot of these long-distance flights had to refuel at Ascension. Now, Ascension is only the smallest pin in a haystack of a place, right in the midst of the trackless Atlantic Ocean. And those turtles find the right beach, the right species finds the right beach and deposits the eggs there. Now, they do it with the map sense they have and the magnetic sensing in their heads. Now, the map sensing and the magnetic sensing are all written down in their genetic code. Now, I've worked, you know, for donkey's years in, I didn't say anything about my own species, but I've worked for donkey's years in laboratories. And I have learned that in biology they believe that the turtle, like other reptiles and dinosaurs, are lower species, more primitive. Now here you've got an absolutely primitive, morphologically, reptile, the turtle, that was just simply Freudian slip, nothing else than that. How does he do it? Well, do you think of this? I have learned in the course of my many years in the lab that if you can translate a concept into another language, then you understand that concept. If you really want to know whether you've understood a sentence, try and translate it into Finnish or into German or into French or into Norwegian, and then you will know if you understood the concept. Now you think of the Creator having the concept of fixing these little animals up with the instrumentation they need to live, and then putting down those concepts into the language of the genetic code, which he's done. And we're still working on it, how he's done it, because it's such a superb system of information storage and retrieval that we still can't do it with all our instruments today. Now, there are lots of poor pilots' wives who, the pilot having missed Ascension Island, did get a pension. But the turtles don't get that. I don't know whether they have wives and that sort of basis of pensioning that we do, but anyway, they hit Ascension Island. Now, think what that means. I've translated lots and lots of stuff into other languages. I translated most of my books, and about 40 of them, into English, or my daughter's done it, one of the two. And you know, that requires an awful lot of effort and an awful lot of understanding to get the idioms and the vocabulary right. Now you think the satisfaction it gives you to have a concept and put it into practice, realize the concept, and then see the concept working out. You think of old Daimler-Benz when they invented the car. He had the concept that you've got to convert energy expanding in all directions into one direction in a cylinder and connected to a crankshaft, and he made the Daimler-Benz motor on that basis. But the joy, he says, of putting that concept into practice and working it out and seeing your car going chugging down the road with direction from directionless explosions was very great. And the old man was a satisfied old man, because he put his concepts into language form. Now you think of the Creator, and we're made in his image. We do get satisfaction from realizing and experimenting and putting concepts into real working form. After Jesus had done it with us, he looked at Adam and Eve, and he said, "It is very good." He saw that it was very good. He says the Creator, you know, is the joyful one. That in his presence is fullness of joy. I wonder if that isn't connected with the marvels he did in instrumenting us so that we could use our instruments, the little bit of grey matter we've got up here, you know, and using our hands and the muscular forces, because the muscular forces we use for our hands are modified muscle cells, you know, converted into brain. That's how it works. So if you've merely got brawn on your arm, it doesn't mean to say you've got grey matter up here. But there's a potentiality of converting a bit of brawn into brain, and I think it's a very good thing to do. But people are all out for brawn today, but not out for brain, are they much? Now, think of God putting out all these concepts into an information storage and retrieval system sufficient to make all the instruments of which I consist. Because I consist of lots and lots of component parts, you see. There's the four-chamber heart, which is quite a contraction when you have a look at it. And it pumps these enormous numbers of liters of blood round per day and per year, and keeps us going. Digests the food, enables me to think and talk to you. Now, think of God doing that. And when you look at all the instrumentation he's given us, you look at the taste buds he's given us round about here, just inside. You know, I don't eat just to get the calories and the energy. I eat because I like it. It gives me great pleasure to eat, what do you call them, shrimps here or something like that? Bacon and eggs and things like that. I wouldn't say fish and chips because you'd think that I was a pleb if I said that, wouldn't you? But nevertheless, I do like them, fish and chips. Now, why should that be connected with pleasure? Why should the fact that when my eyes see the mountains, that give me very great pleasure indeed? When I see people who haven't gone to sleep when I've been talking for 10 minutes, that gives me very great pleasure. In fact, all my instrumentation is obviously ending up in giving me the sense of pleasure. Now, the biologists can't distinguish between the organs of pleasure and the organs of displeasure, because they're very alike. There are some differences, but the instrumentation is coupled with hedonism. Now, hedonism is pleasure. And it says that the Lord's right hand is pleasure forever. Now, why did he go to all the awful effort of taking his concepts, which would be, if realized in matter, give me pleasure? Why did he give me so much pleasure? You think of all the love I've received here from other people, people I don't know in a nearer way, but you know it gives me very great pleasure, that, to know that people love you. Now, why did God instrument us to know that we should do these, to have these things? I think that it's God's nature. And he loves to give himself, because that's the nature of the grace of God, that when he saw that nothing could save us from our misuse of the marvelous instrumentation he has given us, he's given us the instrumentation we need to lead a life of joy serving him. And if we don't, the opposite sets in. We get frustrated. Think about that. Is it because you don't take time to think about these things? You see, if you look at the DNA molecule, you'll not find yet in the textbooks, it isn't in, it'll be in the next generation, in the next 50 years maybe, of textbooks, the information which God needed to instrument us such as we are instrumented, and chance will not do it, and that's period. And I object to little kids being abused, told that 2 + 2 = 5 by saying that chance will make an instrument. It won't. That's definite. We've got no experimental evidence that it does. It's written down on the genetic code, which shows that it went through the mind of a personal God to do the translation. Because, you see, not even a machine made to translate can translate like a person. And when you think that God translated his concepts into the information storage and retrieval system of the DNA molecule, it's absolutely flabbergasting. It knocks the breath out of your body to see it. Because he doesn't store one bit of information in a line after the next bit. Like we do our words, you see, our words are more or less linear in the newspapers and books. And they're all on one line, unless the printing machine went wrong. And he doesn't do it like that, because you're wasting the other dimensions. And there are three dimensions and not just two to deal with. So God himself has stored the colossal information we need to make these instruments. He's stored it in three dimensions. That is, one bit after another, but then also one bit above another and one bit below another. Now, you can only do that, don't let me choke you off here. I shall see if you go to sleep, because I'm very quick at watching flickering eyelids, you know. He's stored his information in a spiral helix. Now, on the spiral, you can do it linearly, one bit after another. But the spiral goes round and round in a third dimension as well, doesn't it? Now, listen, this is definitive. I did my first PhD on this subject. You can't make that spiral molecule by unaided organic chemistry. It must have optically active molecules to start with. That is to give it the third dimension. And if you give chemistry the third dimension, such as is contained in the DNA molecule, then it can do it, if you give it the information. But to say that chance will do it, that is, that chemistry without the direction from outside will do it, is just simply nonsense. It isn't scientifically true. You have to resolve your molecules to do it. You can only do it by putting in the information which comes in the first place. The same way as Arthur Kornberg and Saul Spiegelman found out when they made their first virus, which lived, by putting in conceptual information. So the whole job of saying that there's no person necessary scientifically in order to make the chemistry of biology is just simply not true. Well, I don't like starting off children, because they can't argue with me, because they haven't got the knowledge yet. I don't like bending their intelligences to accept that which is not true. Because if you learn as a child that 2 plus 2 equals 5, you'll never do mathematics again. You can't, because your basis is wrong. And unless you see that the whole basis of biology is dependent upon information from outside, and what's more, information which we know comes best from a person, because it involves translation and translation back, and realization of the translation, persons do that better than any machines can do it. The attempts to make a machine to translate Russian into English automatically failed, or they cost billions of money, until some brave scientist wrote to the granting committees and said, look, I'm not going to do any more. My conscience won't allow me to use taxpayers' money like it. Now, that was very brave to do that, because a person who turns down grants of his own free will is a very noble person, if he thinks that he can't realize what they're wanting for their money, because he knows they can't get it. And that's just what happened. So we know the fact that information to make instruments is necessary. And we know that information to make instruments is a result of volition and conception, which inorganic matter doesn't have. You can model inorganic matter to store information, but it doesn't generate it of its own. So I think this, if you look at how we are all programmed and instrumented, the best scientific way of accounting for it is to say it looks as though the Creator thought in a big way, the same way as we do, but much bigger. That is, he's a person with wishes and with joys and with sadness, and that the state of the world today and my state today grieves him, because he provided us with all these this instrumentation to serve him, which we haven't done. Because you know the great purpose of God in our life, you know what it is, don't you? What does the Lord your God require of thee but to do justly and to walk humbly with thy God? To do justly and walk humbly with thy God. Now the first thing is to do justly. I haven't done that, you know. So I need somebody to wipe out the sin that I've done. And the Creator is the only one who knows how. And he says the wages of sin is death. And I'm a sinner. And unless he died for me, I'm lost. I've not used the instruments he's given me to serve him. And I intend now, my sin having been wiped out by the Creator, that one in whom all the aspects, knowledge of the Godhead, were present in bodily form, because he loved me, I'll love him. And the decision to do that is your decision this morning. The decision to do that is now to use the instrumentation which a God with volition puts manifestly into matter to use it for him and ask him for forgiveness where we haven't done it. And if we do that, we shall walk with the joy which God has himself, because at his right hand is joy forevermore. You can understand it, making instruments like that for little hatchlings and instruments such as we've got. Now, just think of this one last thought, and I'll give it to you that. You can look up the rest in the books out on the table. The one last thought is this. You know, recent evidence is that even the famous dinosaurs were migratory animals. Now, if they were migratory and they had their rookeries, nests, you see, they found them up in Canada, where these birds, these dinosaurs all came together. Now, if they were migratory, they must have had the same sort of instrumentation as the hatchlings did. And they're primitive animals. Where does biology go to then to say that an animal's primitive? If it's got a computer system in it like that, it just simply doesn't rhyme. Okay, think of that, and I find this, that you can't love a person you don't know. You just tell me some name and ask me to love that name, you know, I shall go frantic, because you can't. And when they tell me to praise the Lord, you know, they'll try and work me up with all sorts of loud music and all the rest of it. It doesn't make me praise God, I'll do it, but, you know how empty it can be, because I know myself. But the thing about a person is what he's like. Now, I said in the second service this morning that we, my wife and myself, with whom we have the privilege of talking at the book table, if you like, I can't ask you anything more, can't offer you anything more. If you've had a wife who's moved house in the course of your professional career 26 times, and brought up and born 4 children in 4 different languages, kept them in school by reschooling them so that they didn't lose a class or a year, and who all got their university examinations by the time they were 16 to enter university, you can see how you love a person who works like that, can't you? And brings them up. And the more you know about Jesus and what he's done in his creation, the more you love him. Therefore, this desinteresse in science and the science of creation just simply flummoxes me. Because by seeing it, the scripture says, I can see the deity at work. So take a little bit of time to work out the biology of these things and think of the great one who even faced the cross and the death on the cross because he loved me whom he made. And you'll be filled with joy, you know. You can't stop it then. This working up of joy is one of the troubles in the Church of God today. They try and work it up with loud music and swing and all the rest of it. Doesn't work. The best way is to use the grey matter up here. And you can't help it then. Now we'll pray together. We thank thee, Lord, for thy kindness to us, for all the wonders you've given us in our body that we might enjoy our environment and thee, the environment that thou didst make. So bless us, give us a blessed Lord's Day with thee, and make us worthy of thy name. Forgive where that hasn't been the case in me. So bless us all. Amen.